Hi friends, welcome to another episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host Chantel, and tonight it's all things Halloween celebration because Halloween. For just a few more days, it's all things spooky and creepy and haunted because Halloween. I'm going to say that all week. You guys know October is my jam, and it's a time of year when it's okay to scare the ones you love because scaring is caring. It's true. So how are we doing that tonight? With ghost stories, of course. But before we do, it is crazy spooky how much fun I have hanging with you guys on all things social. Like, I can really get lost in the Insta Twitter sphere just chatting with you and creeping on what you guys are doing because I love you so much. If you love it as much as I do, come hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, on email at themediamatters@gmail.com, on the show site at themediamatters.com, or really anywhere because I am mildly obsessed with you guys, and wherever you look, there I'll be. Make sure you post a screenshot of you listening to any Media Matters episode on your favorite podcast app, tag me in your post, and I will shout you out like a boss. And don't forget to turn on your notifications and be the first to see new posts from me and the show. Let's drop! Want to take the guesswork out of finding a smudge kit, incense, books, and more? Check out the show's Amazon store and find our everyday faves. You can shop with us at amazon.com/shop/mediummatters, and I'll make sure I link that in the show notes just for you. It's the perfect season for ghost stories, and Avi, that's what we're doing tonight. Let's be honest, in my heart and soul, it is always the perfect season for a good ghost story. Want to share yours with the class? Email your real-life ghost story to themediamatters@gmail.com or send it via DM on one of the show's social media pages, and I will personally reply to you to make arrangements for you to tell your story right here on the show. No pressure, guys. If you would rather I read it on your behalf, I am A-okay with that. If you're more of a talker, no problem. That's cool. Just give us a call and tell us all about it at 850-203-0118. Easy and peasy. Want exclusive goodies like bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes chats, pinky promises, and more? Join our super kick-ass, super exclusive family on Patreon and get immediate access to so much fun. Check out the show at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today and forever. What's better than a gold star on the chalkboard? Why, 5 stars, of course. Post your rating and review for your favorite shows anywhere you listen to your podcasts and make sure your faves get seen and see how much you love them. Without further ado, let's get down with this week's Can't Resist Crystal, which is the one and only Fire Opal. From Cassandra Eason's The Complete Crystal Handbook, Fire Opal is bright orange to red and looks like it glows. This little beauty is great for the solar plexus and is said to benefit the abdomen, lower back, kidneys, iron deficiencies, and so much more. On an emotional level, Fire Opal awakens personal power to cope courageously with emotional turmoil or unwelcome change. For more on Fire Opal, make sure you check out Cassandra Eason's book, The Complete Crystal Handbook, which I'll link in the show notes just for you. You can also find information on Fire Opal using any resource that resonates with you. It is time to send those SOS signals, light your flares, and, well, pray for the best. I promise, we won't leave you behind. So tonight we're telling some ghost stories. These are not my own ghost stories, and a lot of them are not from you guys either. These are just fun stories I've heard over time, stories I've read about, just good, clean, scary fun. Remember, you guys, if you have a good ghost story, make sure you submit it so that we can tell it on your behalf, or you can come on the show and tell it, because, oh my God, a good ghost story. Okay, here we go. 2 days after my grandfather died, the neighborhood security guard knocks on our door on a Sunday morning. He tells us, "An old man came to your house earlier, knocked on your door for half an hour, and finally left. When I asked him what he wanted, he told me he needed to say goodbye to someone he had never had the chance to meet. We were all stunned, had no idea who this man was or who he was looking for. When the guard came in, he shouted, 'That's the old man,' pointing at a picture of my grandfather. My entire family froze for a minute. I'm not 100% sure if the guard was telling the truth, but I almost like believing that my granddad wanted to say goodbye to my newborn sister before resting in peace." I mean, aw, that's a nice one. "When I was a child, I was scared of the dark. I swore to my mother I heard voices in it. They were not evil, but they were not familiar, and so they scared me. It was not uncommon in the middle of the night for me to wake up and hear whispers. My mom figured they were just bumps in the night and typical kid nightmare material. I tried often to explain to her that it was more than that, that they sounded different from one another the way people's voices do. On some nights, I would get so scared from these whispers that I would sleep in my mom's bed with her. It was an added bonus that the bathroom was directly outside of her bedroom door for my late night tingles. I should add at this point that when walking out into the hall to go to the bathroom, you look directly down the stairs that would lead you into my living room on the first floor. On one such night, around Christmas, I awoke and felt the need to relieve myself. I walked out from the door and distinctly heard the phrase, "Look," and to my astonishment, a red light, almost like a spotlight, was cast upon the wall at the very bottom of the stairs. The light had no other source. I was by myself, and I was transfixed by it. Being a little kid, and it only being a few days from Christmas, I knew what this light was. It was Santa. How else could he get into my house to know I was being a good boy? I was so excited I began walking down the stairs to greet him, picking up my pace after the second step as it began to creep off the wall and fade into the darkness in my living room. That's when I heard him. A very strong, masculine voice. Different from the first. Not at all like my father's. It said, "Stop. Right now. Go back up those stairs." I listened, turned around, and what happened next, I am not sure I would believe if someone had told me the same story. After reaching the top of the stairs, I heard a very loud crash that sent me running back into my mom's bed, where I jumped straight under the covers and stayed there the whole night. When we awoke the next morning, the poinsettia lights my mother had put on the railing down the stairs were pulled straight down to the bottom of the stairs, some broken from what seemed like a forceful tear, laying in a single pile. The dry sink in my living room had fallen from the wall. My mother could not explain it. My father was worried we had been victims of a home invasion. My sister was crying. There was nothing missing. Nobody had broken in. There did not seem to be any reason this had happened. And then I saw it, and I kept quiet about it because I was so afraid that I could not force words out of my mouth. There, on the edge of the wooden, dry sink, which had been facing up, were three indentations where the finish on the wood had been worn, almost as if in a forceful grip. Something down there had grabbed it and thrown it. That was the bang. I was mortified. After that day, I never heard a single voice again. I do not like to imagine what was waiting downstairs for me that night, if it was anything at all. But I can tell you that the reality was that something had physically acted upon two things in my house near the bottom of that stairwell. After this, I had never heard another whisper again, which is sad because in some ways, I would have liked to think the man, masculine energy, that had stopped me from going down those stairs was actually trying to be helpful. I'm 20 years old now, and because of this incident, I'm still afraid of the dark, especially shadowy stairwells. Listen, you and I both, sir, you and I both. Stairs are no one's friend, especially dark stairs. Ugh. Good Lord. My house was built in 1904. It's a single family home, wood frame, setting on a concrete block foundation. I've been living here for about 12 years. Of all the weird things that my siblings and me have seen or heard in this house, this one event is my favorite. This happened to my brother. About 10 years ago, my brother and his best friends had started a garage band playing mostly Spanish rock, alternative music, but in Spanish. His friends could only get together on Sunday afternoons. They would practice until the early evening, they would usually call it quits by 8 p.m., and this was the time I usually showed up and went to bed because I worked the graveyard shift. This happened in late fall, so the days were getting shorter. They had just finished a long session when the decision to head to someone else's house came about. My brother handed the car keys to his buddy so they could load up the equipment everyone had filled in the basement. The tricky part was that they needed to walk all the way to the back of the basement, up the back stairs, through the kitchen doorway, down the hall, into the living room, and out into the front porch. Everyone was outside sitting in my brother's truck waiting for him. My brother was walking up the back stairs when he remembered that he had left his pancakes in a to-go container sitting on a speaker in the basement. He made the decision to go back. Now, the basement is not clean. With full sight lines, there had been partitions made, and the boiler and main heating unit are right smack in the middle. So after my brother walks back, he's about to retrieve his food container when out of the corner of his eye, he sees it. It's a shadowy figure right at his peripheral vision. This feeling of dread and uneasiness washed over my brother. We had been taught that if you are in the presence of a spirit or ghost and you felt a bad vibe, to say a quick prayer or to cuss at it. My brother chose the latter. He basically just told it off. My brother started to walk to the back of the basement and briskly up the stairs, closing doors and turning off lights as he was walking out. The last light switch is on the opposite side of the front door. Luckily, the door was open and the light from the street lamp was flooding the living room with its amber light. My brother said he felt something at his back, but at no point did he turn around. As he flicked the last switch, the living room went dark, as did the rest of the house. As he stepped out, he pulled on the door, closing it behind him. Still holding his food container in one hand, he jogged down the porch steps, walked towards the front gate, and closed the gap between himself and his friend's truck. As he climbed in to the driver's side of the truck, putting on a seatbelt and getting ready to pull out of the parking spot directly in front of the house, his friend said, "Hey, wait, what about your brother? Isn't he coming with us?" My brother answered, "What do you mean? He went to work early tonight. He's already gone. Do you see his car anywhere?" And that's when his friend said, "So then, who was walking behind you when you were leaving the house?" What the heck? That's not okay, guys. That's not okay. During Hurricane Gustav, I evacuated to a church in Baton Rouge with a friend and his family. At the same time, there was an entire nursing home's worth of old people staying in the church. My friend, his family, and myself all shared one room together. In this church, there was one bedroom that was large, similar to something that would be in an elementary school. One night during the storm, my friend and I made a trip to the bathroom. The lights had since gone out, middle of the hurricane and all. The church had a musty, eerie feel to it, kind of like when you turn out the AC in a house for a few days. The area surrounding the church was also dead quiet since there was no electricity in the area. The bathroom was several halls over from our room, so we grabbed our flashlights and set out. While walking down one long hall, we shined our flashlights ahead, and there, at the end of the hall, sat an old man in a wheelchair in the middle of the night with no one around. Now, this hall was incredibly long, so we could make him out, but we couldn't really see his facial features. Once we grasped what we saw, we turned and looked at each other, semi-freaked out. Then we shined our flashlights back to where he was, and there was nothing there. It's as if he vanished. No signs, no sound, nothing. Needless to say, we hauled our asses back to the room. No bathroom for us. Heck no. Number one, you're in a place that you don't recognize. And honestly, like, if you're in a place that you do recognize, like you're at home, I don't even know which one is worse, but you're in a place that you don't know. You have to go to the bathroom. It's middle of the night. You need a flashlight to get there. Like, you can't even turn lights on because no electricity. Hello, Mother Nature. And then, there is an old man sitting in a wheelchair at the end of the hall. Like, that is every creep factor. It's not okay, guys. It's not okay. This happened to me when I was a junior in high school. It was December and it had just started snowing. My best friend and I were in debate and getting ready for our state qualifiers that were the next day. We were writing our cases and, as usual, at each other's throats over the details of the cases. It was a stressful, tense evening. We finally finished our cases at about 3 a.m. Then we went to my room for the night. Almost as soon as we got into my room, we hear what sounds like the water turning on in the other end of the house. No big deal, probably my parents, I think. Then we hear the front door open. I told her, I bet my mom woke up and wanted some fresh air. It made sense. I really thought that's what it was. Until we heard incredibly heavy footsteps in my living room headed for my room. They were not any one of my family's footsteps. Then they stopped. My friend and I looked at each other and were both freaked out, just standing, frozen in my room. We walked closer to each other and the footsteps started again, but this time they were running toward us. We both flipped. We grabbed each other's hands out of fear and my bedroom door flew open. We both looked at the door. Nobody was there. We ran to the bathroom that's connected to my room. I closed and locked the door and stood against it. When we finally got the nerve to do it, we sprinted to my parents' room, crying hysterical. We obviously startled my parents awake. They said neither of them had gotten up. My dad grabbed his gun and looked outside. No tracks in the snow anywhere around our house. That is creepy. So creepy. I cannot get on board. So that you're in your room and you hear these like heavy footsteps. Your door flies open, which is like one of the ultimate nightmares, and then there's no one? Come on, sir, just stab me in the heart. My grandmother is in a nursing home after suffering a stroke a few months ago. Mentally, she's all there. However, her one side is partially paralyzed and she's in rehab in the nursing home. She's been weakened by the relative lack of activity, though. On Sunday, as we were getting ready to go visit her first thing in the morning, as we always do, we got a call from the family of her old best friend. The friend had moved to Florida about 10 years ago, and they had gradually lost touch, save for a Christmas card every now and then. Well, the friend had just died very early that morning, and they were calling to inform us of her death. When we got to the nursing home, we signed in and noticed we were the first visitors of the day. We went to my grandmother's room and said hi. We also have a little visitor's book for people to sign in her room, so we know who has visited her. Nobody had signed it since Saturday morning. As we walked into her room, she exclaimed, "Oh my, so many visitors this morning!" We asked what she meant. She replied that she had gotten a visit from an old dear friend that morning. It was the friend from Florida who had just passed away. She had told my grandmother that she was going away for a while, not to worry, that she would be watching out for her, and that they would see each other again. My grandmother also remarked at how healthy she looked. I've never had chills run down my spine like that before. Later, I asked if anyone had been to my grandmother's room that morning, and the staff said no. We asked if any phone calls had come through for her that morning, and they again said no. I also this morning called the family of the friend in Florida to offer my condolences and ask if they had called anyone else. They said we were the only ones they had called from around here, and the only reason they called us is because they thought my grandmother still lived with us. They had no idea until I told them this morning that she was in a nursing home. I know it's in the realm of reality that she could have simply dreamt it, but the chances of her having a dream like that with that sort of message on the very morning that her friend died are so remote that it still gives me chills. Honestly, I think it's kind of a cool story. I think it's nice that the friend came to visit as she passed. That's really nice. When I was a kid in the suburbs of Chicago, adventure meant Catino Provincial Park, up on the border of Minnesota and Canada. The name implies that the place was small, but Catico is a million-acre nature preserve, so big you could go days and days without seeing another soul. We would go on camping trips up there, weeks of canoeing and portaging, seeing bears and moose and deer, sleeping under star-soaked skies. The park was isolated and so pristine that you could actually drink the water straight from the lakes. But I won't be going back to Catino anytime soon, not after what happened to a girl named Frances Brandywine. Frances was 17 at the time, black-haired and with a reckless nature, determined always to leave the well-trod path to break new ground and be alone. A few years ago, Frances was up in Catino with her family. They were in a remote part of the park, camped on the shore of one of the deeper lakes, a lonely body of water carved millions of years ago by a passing glacier. The deep part of this particular lake was rumored to be about 300 feet. One night, after her family went to bed, Frances took the rowboat out, planning to find a quiet spot in the middle of the lake, lay on a bench of the boat, look up at the sky, and maybe write in her journal. So she left the shore, rowed for about 20 minutes, and when she felt satisfied that she was over the lake's deepest spot, she lay down on the bench and looked up at the night sky. The stars were very bright, and the aurora borealis was shimmering like a neon lasso. She was feeling very peaceful. Then she heard something strange. It was like a knock. Clop, clop. She sat up, guessing that the boat had drifted to shore and run aground. But she looked around the boat, and she was still half a mile from shore. She leaned over the side to see if she'd hit anything, but she saw nothing. No log, no rocks. She lay back down. She told herself it could be any number of things, a fish, a turtle, a stick that had drifted under the boat. She relaxed again and soon fell into a contented reverie. She had just closed her eyes when she heard another knock. This time it was louder, a crisp plop, 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 like the sound of something knocking hard on a wooden door, except this knocking was coming from the bottom of the boat. Now she was scared. She leaned over the side again. It had to be an animal. But what kind of animal would knock like that? Three quick, loud knocks in rapid succession? Her mouth went dry. She held onto each side of the boat, and now she could only wait to see if it happened again. The silence stretched out. A few minutes passed, and just as she began to think she'd imagine it all, the knocks came again, but this time, louder. She had to leave. She lunged for the oars. She got them in place and began rowing. The water was very calm, so she should have made quick progress. But after rowing feverishly, she looked around and realized she wasn't moving at all. Something was keeping her exactly where she was. Again, she tried rowing. She rowed and rowed on the verge of tears, but went nowhere. She stopped. She was exhausted. Her heavy breathing filled the air. She cried. She sobbed. But soon she calmed herself again, and the boat was silent again for 10 minutes, then 20. Again, she tricked herself into thinking she'd imagined it all. But just like before, just when she was beginning to get a grip on herself, the knocking came again. This time as loud as a bass drum. Boom, boom, boom. The floorboards of the boat shook with each knock. Now she was so shaken she started making questionable decisions. The first was to lower one of the oars into the black water, trying to feel if there was some land mass, even some creature she could touch. As soon as the oar broke the water surface, though, she felt a strong, silent tug on the other end, and the oar was pulled under. She screamed and jumped back, and now she had no options. All she could do was sit and hope and wait. Wait for the morning to come, wait for whatever was going to happen. The knocking went on through the night. She passed the time writing in her notebook, and it's only because of this notebook that we know what happened that night. Frances can't tell us. She was never seen again. The boat was found on shore the next day, empty but for the journal. On those pages were her frantic jottings, all written in her distinctive handwriting, all but the last page. When the journal was found, the page was still wet, and on it were four words, looking as if they'd been written quickly with a muddy finger. They said, "I did knock first." No, sir. Number one, why are you in the middle of the lake in the middle of the night? Come on, ma'am. Stay with your family. Oh, I can't. My brother once lived in a flat in downtown Mount Clemens. The Clem was known to be a hotspot for baths back in the Depression era and was booming with activity. Nowadays, it had some run-down parts. This is where my brother rented his flat. It was a giant old raggedy house which was now separated into multiple odd apartments. Anyways, long story short, he always admitted to odd experiences, cupboard doors opening up, things missing, but one peculiar oddity was that he was always missing boxers from his drawer. He admitted that he thought his house was haunted and that the ghost had a crush on him. Never anything violent or disturbing, just odd things. Later on, he starts dating his future ex-wife. She starts coming around and he notices that the oddities begin increasing. New oddities began to occur. His girlfriend would always find her shoes, which were left on a mat inside the apartment, outside the door on the patio in the morning. She'd always comment to my brother to stop putting her shoes outside. He had an idea of why, but he didn't want to frighten her. Besides, it wasn't hurting anyone, right? Well, things started getting worse. He comes home from work and his girlfriend was staying there while he was gone. She claims that the stove burner kept lighting itself. She'd walk into the kitchen and it would be lit. She'd turn it off and shortly later, it'd be lit again. Then, one night, my brother wakes up in the middle of the night and sees his girlfriend sitting at the end of the bed. Not just sees, but feels her near his feet, staring at him. He calls out for her to come to bed. She doesn't respond, so he calls out louder, telling her to come to bed and asks what's wrong. His girlfriend then asks what he's doing. He turns and sees her sleeping next to him. He turns back. No one is at the end of the bed. Now he's freaked out, but doesn't want to scare his girlfriend from coming over to his place. A few nights later, they're both sleeping and he wakes up to his girlfriend screaming. He looks over and she's sleeping but thrashing around, holding onto her neck. He doesn't see anything, so he starts yelling and shaking her to wake up. After a few shakes, she wakes up crying and terrified. She starts telling my brother about how real her dream felt, that a woman was strangling her, telling her to get out, that she doesn't belong there and to leave her man alone. Her neck has red marks on it, possibly from herself trying to defend herself, but they believed it to be from something else. My brother then comes clean with her, and they decide to do some research and find out that the address that they live in was an old brothel back in the day that the rich bathers used to stay in. My brother lived in that house for a few more weeks before he would locate a new place. She never came back to stay the night though, and he never experienced anything aggressive while there. I know my brother and I can tell when he's lying. This is legit. And when she talked about it, you could see how shaken she was. My best friend died of cancer back in 2002. We were incredibly close in every way, and we spent the majority of our free time together. Almost a year after she died, I was in my apartment sleeping and my phone rang around 3 a.m. I had one of those Sony Ericsson T610s. I was really groggy and picked up the phone from my nightstand and looked at it. I saw it was my friend's number. I immediately became alert and awake and answered the phone very curious. I said hello a few times, but all I could hear was very loud static for about 30 seconds. Eventually, the call ended. At this point, I was freaking out and called the number back only to get an automated recording that this number was out of service. I then called her mother's house to see if possibly her older sister may have had my friend's old phone and might have called by accident, but there was no answer at my friend's mother's house. Come to find out, the remaining family was away in Miami. After they came home a few days later, I took the phone to them and showed them the call log, and they were in disbelief. They went to my friend's room and got the phone out of the drawer where it had been sitting for months. Battery stone cold dead. Crazy. But cool. Crazy but cool. That, you know, the people that love you that have crossed over still want to have contact with you? You must have been pretty awesome. My daughter was born with mild tracheomalacia, which is a soft windpipe. The only trouble it ever caused was that she would make a whistling sound sometimes when she was breathing, especially when she was excited or upset. Fast forward to when she was about 4 months old and fast asleep in her crib one evening. Her older brother had the stomach flu that day and had been throwing up. We thought the baby hadn't caught it, but a little while after we put her to bed, we suddenly heard her softly sputtering on the monitor, then silence for a few seconds, then a huge loud wail, which made both my husband and I run even faster to her room. By the time we got to her, she had fallen eerily quiet again. We saw she was gasping for air, choking, unable to clear the vomit from her throat or get a clean breath. Even after we picked her up and cleared her mouth, she continued to gasp. She turned blue, then gray, as I drove her quickly to the ER. She had partially recovered by the time we got there. They gave her oxygen, chest x-rays, and then a clean bill of health. Fast forward about 2 hours later, when I'm back in my bedroom with her sleeping upright in a baby seat next to me on the bed. My husband and I talked briefly about what would have happened had the baby not cried out so loudly. Would we have reacted so quickly? Would she have recovered? I'm in and out of sleep myself because I keep checking on her. One of the times, just before I had fully awoken, I looked out in the hallway and saw my grandfather, who had passed away a few years prior. When he was alive, he was not the most involved granddad. But when he met my husband, my boyfriend at the time, they had an instant connection. Anyway, I see him out in the hall this night. He's just standing there in khakis and a polo with his hands in his pockets. In my dream state, I see all my children except the baby, pulling at his arms and playing with him. He has a simple smile on his face. He looks over toward the baby's room and back at me and says, "I'm sorry I made her cry, but I'm glad she's okay." I mean, that's really sweet. And sir, it did cost, you know, that family some money because they had to take her to the ER, so, you know, maybe don't scare the baby again. Have you seen those yogurt commercials starring Jamie Lee Curtis? As near as I can tell, the primary appeal of the product is that it will help you to have a safe and happy bowel movement. That's fine, and I suppose it might be a major selling point for some people, but anytime I see that particular brand of curdled dairy, all I can think about is, well, you get the idea. This is relevant, I promise. So I'm at the grocery store one day, intent on purchasing the supplies necessary to make the most amazing BLT on the face of the planet. One such ingredient is cream cheese, which coincidentally tends to be stocked right next to the yogurt. As I was searching for a suitable supply, this odd rumble became audible, almost like a growl of a wild animal laying in wait. At first I ignored it, thinking it was nothing more than a piece of unseen machinery activating. But as it grew in volume, it took on a sense of being undeniably alive. I remember looking around, wondering if someone's service dog had detected a threat, but I was alone. That's when things got terrifying. The growl grew in intensity, and I could swear that I heard words accompanying it saying something to the effect of, "Cover you in something unmentionable." As the last syllable was uttered, the yogurt exploded at me. Packages and serving size containers came flying off the refrigerated shelves while the growling voice repeated, "Cover you in something unmentionable." Suffice to say, and that's not what it said, guys. It's "cover you in a bad word for poop." Suffice to say, it did not help my association with that particular product. It reduced me to a screaming mess. Someone must have heard the commotion because an employee came running to check on me. When I described what happened, he got this really nervous look on his face and apologized to me. There I was, expecting to be chastised for vandalizing the display, and learning, based on the worker's reaction, that this sort of thing had apparently happened before. Now, when I've described this in the past, people have offered the suggestion that someone, maybe a crazy homeless guy, had gotten in the back of the store and was enacting his bizarre vendetta against yogurt. There's only one problem with the story. The area in question was one of the sort that was stocked from the front, not the back. Supposedly, there was nothing behind the shelves but a concrete wall. And a ghost with anger towards yogurt? I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think? My buddy told me this one. He was a fairly new real estate agent showing a newlywed couple some houses, and despite weeks of his best efforts, nothing suited the new bride's fancy. Getting frustrated, he took them on one last run to look at one last house, as the couple had decided to put the house hunt on hold for a while if it didn't pan out. Well, it didn't. But as they were driving home, just down some random street, the new bride practically screamed, "Stop!" He slammed on the brakes, thinking he was about to crush a kid or something, and he said the woman just kept staring at a house on her left, saying, "That's it, that's the one. That's our house." There was no for sale sign, however, and not listed on MLS, but my buddy promised he'd look into it. Well, as it turned out, the house had been on the market for quite some time, way longer than normal, with just one previous owner, an elderly woman who had just taken it off the market because she was convinced it wouldn't sell. Well, he set up a viewing for the newlywed couple, and the new bride breezed through the place like she'd already lived in it. She knew all the rooms, the cupboards, storage, everything, like she'd been there before. All three agreed this was definitely the place for them. It was magical. Papers were signed and it was a done deal. On the possession date, the little old lady asked that she be there to hand the keys over, as the house was her pride and joy. Not a problem. But as the new couple walked up to get the keys, the old woman's face went deathly white. She didn't speak and couldn't get away from them fast enough. The couple didn't seem to notice, took the keys, and happily went about their business in their new home. My buddy caught up with the old woman and asked what happened back there. He said she was so sickly white she was practically transparent, she could barely breathe, when she said, "That woman has been haunting this house for the last year. There's no mistaking it's her." Oh my god, what the heck? Was she haunting it in her dreams? I don't know. It's a Halloween mystery. First off, I live in a century home, meaning my house is at least 100 years old, if not more. Being as old as it is, it's seen its fair share of deaths over the years. Needless to say, a house as old as mine can have some pretty creepy vibes from time to time, and every now and then I might get a chill or the sensation that someone was watching me. One night, after everyone else in my family had gone to bed, I was sitting downstairs just watching TV when I started feeling a little uneasy. It felt like someone was in the room with me, even though my entire family was upstairs sleeping. I decided to shrug it off and went upstairs to get some sleep. I lay down in my bed just trying to nod off when suddenly I got that same feeling again, only this time I was sure I wasn't alone. Now, since my house is so old, you can hear whenever someone is walking around because of the creaky floorboards. Right after I got that weird sensation again, the floorboard right next to my bed began to creak. It didn't just stop there though. The creaking moved from the edge of my bed, across the room, and to my bedroom door. As soon as it reached the door, someone began pounding on it from the other side. I mean, really pounding. Obviously, by now, I was crapping my pants with fear, but my curiosity got the better of me and I leapt out of the bed and flung the door open. There was no one on the other side. I checked to see if everyone was still in their rooms, thinking maybe someone was pulling a prank on me, but they were all fast asleep. I was getting really freaked out by this point, but decided there wasn't much else I could do, so I went back to sleep. Around 15 minutes later, I was woken up by something shaking me awake. To my horror, the entire bed was violently shaking and every light in my room was on. I had actually woken up because my headboard had whacked me in the head because it was shaking so hard. As soon as I was able to gather what was going on, it all suddenly stopped, and I was left sitting in my quiet room with all the lights on. Needless to say, I had a lot of trouble getting back to sleep that night. In seventh grade, my friends and I went over to Mary's house, intent on playing with her mom's Ouija board that night. None of us had played with one before. Mary's mom was an extremely spiritual person who believed in energies, witchcraft, stuff like that. Before we used the board, Mary warned us that her mom would be really mad if she found out we were playing with it because Ouija boards can attract bad spirits into the home. With full knowledge of this, we decided to proceed anyway. This Ouija board was not like the average Ouija board you've ever seen. Along with the usual characteristics, the alphabet, yes, no, goodbye, there was an entire array of symbols and signs that were all arranged in a circle. This was some seriously intricate stuff. We started just goofing around and communicating with random spirits here and there until we finally met one that had us in tears the entire sleepless night. First, we asked the spirit if it was a man or a woman, to which he replied, M-A-N. Then we asked how he was killed. M-U-R-D-E-R. That freaked us out only a little bit, but we were mostly excited. All of a sudden, before we even asked another question, the glass goes to the eyeball symbol, then spells out I-N, and goes to the water symbol. We didn't have a clue what that meant. It wasn't too scary until the spirit spelled out S-H-O-W-E-R, and my best friend realized that the spirit was trying to get us to look into the shower. We froze. I've never been so scared in my entire life, especially sitting directly in front of the bathroom with the shower curtain all the way closed, faced in my direction. We all screamed and promised on our friendship that we had not moved it ourselves. Very important promise. I felt like I was being watched and my friends thought so too. It was only four of us and I believe with all my heart that none of them had moved it because they were all too nervous to do anything. I will never use a Ouija board again because of how crazy and intense that night was. I understand that people say Ouija boards are controlled by your subconscious, but screw that. I know I felt something in that room with us. I know it was really dangerous. Listen, kids, let this be a lesson to you. Do not touch Ouija boards. They are no one's friend. No one. This is a public service announcement. You guys know how I feel about a Ouija board. They're not okay. There's nothing okay about them. My dad used to be a police officer in a small town in northern Missouri, and being the nice guy that he was, he often picked up the town drunk and drove him to his home 10 miles out of town. So one night, the drunk decided to drive home himself and crashes on the side of a wheat field 5 miles from home. My dad is the first person they call since he is decently good friends with said drunk. My dad goes out to the crash site and the scene is creepy as hell. It's 11 p.m., very foggy this particular day, and he kept hearing weird noises from the animals across the field in the forest. So he goes up to the car and sees that the man is dead. He calls for an ambulance and backup. They clean up the body, the car, and tell the farmer what happened to that part of the field. Fast forward a couple of weeks. My dad is going home after work. Coincidentally, he has to drive along the same highway the man died on. As he passes by the wreck site, my dad said he won't forget what he saw. The man that died was standing on the side of the road wearing the same ragged, bloody clothes he died in. His face was akin to the face of a Dementor from Harry Potter and seemed to whisper the words, "Help me." My dad stopped by the man's spirit, and it ran full speed at the squad car he was in and screamed a sound that sounded like a very tortured man being prepared for another beating. My dad sped out of there, went home, and told my mom what happened. I vividly remember playing my Nintendo 64 when he walked in, and his face was white as snow. He told the tale to my mom, took a shower, and drank 5 bottles of beer that night. He told me to go to bed, and after I closed the door, he began sobbing. The next day, I asked what was wrong, and he told me a friend had died. He showed me a picture of the man and said, "He's with God now." Fast forward to 2007, I'm at my dad's funeral, and in walks the same guy that died 3 years earlier. Nobody talked to him, and he didn't acknowledge anyone. After we finished burying my dad, the guy that died stood there. After a couple seconds of this, he faded out. I knew that the man wanted to welcome my dad to the other side, as they were very close. Funny thing is, a couple days before my dad died, he had a conversation about death, and he said death scared him a lot. It comforts me to know that my dad wasn't alone when he passed into the void. I'm a high school teacher and make a regular habit of staying late into the evening. On one particular night, I left somewhere around 8 p.m. It's pitch black since no one has bothered to fix the lights in this part of the school. I'm not too bothered by the dark, as I'm used to leaving at this time. I turn left from my door toward the quad and the front parking lot beyond it. On my left is my building. On the right are the backs of some portable classrooms. There's about 10 feet of space between both, all the way to the end of the outside hallway. I start walking, thinking about tests or the drive home, etc., when I hear some rapid footsteps behind me. They were far off, like someone just turned the corner at the opposite end of my building. I don't think much of it since it's not unusual for some dance team or club to stay late practicing. Just some kids running around. I keep walking and don't turn around. The steps get louder and louder, sounding closer. The kids are coming my way. I can hear the echo of someone's running footsteps on the concrete walkway, bouncing off the walls on either side. Closer and closer, they are about to run right past me. I anticipate someone will pass right by me on the right, so I move a little to the left. And then, just as the footsteps sound right behind me and I wait for whoever it is, the footsteps completely stop. That's when I get spooked and stop walking. I turn around quickly and no one is there. I literally spin around twice to try to see where they went and still no one. It's still like 50 feet to the opening between the portables and my building, probably another 200 or so to the far end. There was nowhere for people to hide or disappear to. My only explanation are ghosts or auditory hallucinations related to overwork. I got those lights fixed within the year. Ma'am, I feel like you should not be staying late by yourself. That's creepy. I do not like to stay late anywhere by myself because it's just scary. I don't like it. And just go home on time. This is not okay. Okay, so here's the last one for the night. I farm in a rural town in the western U.S., and our farm is a ways out of town, so naturally, it's pretty eerie at night. We flood irrigate, so the water needs to be moved from field to field, and those water changes just come whenever the fields are finished. At each end of our farm, there is a big row of trees that once again get kind of eerie at night. So my dad and I were driving down our farm road at around 3 a.m. We reached the row of trees, and as the headlights hit the trees, I saw a strange figure. It looked to be the rough shape of a human, but not quite the same. Taller and more hunched over. Kind of like a 6'3 old woman in a shawl. I only saw it for maybe 2 or 3 seconds, but it was long enough to make my blood run cold. I was so freaked out, so I didn't say anything to my dad. About 30 seconds later, my dad started driving faster and looked over at me and said, "I wasn't going to say anything, but did you happen to see a strange figure walk between the trees?" I nodded and we changed the water and went home. There's been a local legend about a creature that looks like what we saw that has been talked about since the 40s. It's supposed to be similar to a Native American skinwalker. And it would make sense to me. We have found Indian pottery and arrowheads all over our farm. Neither of us have seen it again, but it is still in the back of my mind when I drive to the corner of the farm. No, I would not be out there driving at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., there's no way. It's not going to happen. You guys know what a chicken I am, and like, you know, no matter how much I've been doing this, it's still creepy. I can't get down. So that is it, you guys. That is our episode on ghost stories, and it's perfect timing because Halloween is like a few days away, and I could not be more excited. Hopefully you guys are equally as excited. This week, it is all things Halloween in my house. It started, you know, I'd like to say we celebrated all month, but, you know, ain't nobody got time for that as much as I would love to. And I always say, next year, it's going to be different, you guys, because I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then time gets away from me. So it's okay. We're going to live it up. And because I didn't get to celebrate all of October like I really wanted to, we're going to move the celebration into November because that's just how we get down. That's not true. That's how I get down. And my family, by extension, is like, fine, whatever, just be quiet. So that's how we're going to roll. The festivities restarted last night when we broke out The Conjuring because I love that movie. I have seen it, I don't know how many times. I watched it in the theater when it came out. I was mildly obsessed with it when the trailers were out. I became even more obsessed once I saw it. And so the story goes. But it was my boyfriend's very first time watching it. And he was such a trooper. I was incredibly proud of him. But the deal is, every night this week, we get to watch at least one scary movie that likely I will get to pick. So I am so excited. So October 31st, 2019, here we come. And I am welcoming you with immense open arms because it is our season, little baby. It is our season. With that, you guys, I really, really do hope that you enjoyed this episode of Scary Stories. And yeah, it was chilling. These stories are creepy. And yeah, don't stay late at work by yourself. Don't drive through the farm by yourself at 3 a.m. I don't even know. Just be safe, you guys. Be safe. So we likely are not going to chat before Halloween comes around, or by the time Halloween comes around. If we do, it's going to be mega special, but make sure you're safe out there. Make sure you check your candy. Remember, you're looking for razors in the candy. Do you guys remember that? It's like a big thing. Anyway, watch all the scary you can handle. And if you guys have really good ghost stories, make sure that you send them my way because I always love to read them, you know, because scary. That's right. Don't forget to hang with me on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters and on Instagram and Facebook at The Media Matters, where I show you guys even more scary love. And make sure you turn on those notifications and be sure to tag me in your Media Matters photos for a very special shout out. Want to shop with me? Find my store at amazon.com/shop/Media Matters and do what I do, shop. Feeling spooky? Send your real life ghost stories to themediamatters@gmail.com via DM on one of the show's social media pages, or leave your ghost story on the show's voicemail at 850-203-0118. Want the VIP treatment all the live long day? Join our kick-ass Patreon family and be part of the fun. Find us at patreon.com/themediamatters and join us today. Are you liking the show? Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review this and other podcasts you're loving. Your ratings and reviews help support the show and make it easier for others to find your faves. With that, you guys, it is a wrap. We are back next week with an all-new episode of The Media Matters. Same bat time, same bat channel, same awesome year, different month, because next time we come back, it's going to be November. That's okay. We're going to keep celebrating all the spooky because that's how we get down. Until then, may your days be supernatural and extraordinary. Good night, you guys, and happy, happiest of Halloweens.